Before we move into the next part of this series, I would like to pause for a moment and share something from the heart. Over the years of walking with the people of God, one question has remained with me. What kind of people must we become so that wounded believers can remain among us long enough for Christ to heal them? This is not a new concern. It's a question many believers quietly carry. And in many ways, it has shaped my own journey. If you're like me, there may have been a day when you quietly slipped out the door of a church and never came back. I didn't want to leave. I liked the people, and I wanted fellowship. I longed for Christian friendship, and I wanted to grow in Christ among his people. And I had known something of that before. Years earlier in high school, I had been a part of a small prayer group. It was simple, a handful of believers meeting together in a home. We studied the scriptures, we prayed, we encouraged one another. But more than that, I remember the kindness of the people and the gentle, fatherly care of the older man who led the group. In that small gathering, I felt something I have never forgotten. I felt accepted, I felt loved, and I felt safe enough to grow. That experience planted a seed in me that never left. But later, I found myself in a different place. I was still among God's people, but I was also hurting. And somewhere along the way, it began to feel as though my struggles were met more with judgment than understanding. I knew I was not perfect. I was not looking for perfection. I was looking for help. I was looking for healing. I was looking for a place where I could be honest about the challenges I was facing without fear of shame or ridicule. Eventually, I found myself in a small support group of people trying to rebuild their lives. What surprised me was how safe it felt. Everyone there knew they were broken in some way, and no one pretended otherwise. People spoke honestly. They listened to one another. They encouraged one another. For the first time in a long time, I felt free to be open, vulnerable, and human. And slowly, over time, healing began. And that's when the question became unavoidable. Why did it sometimes feel easier to find a healing environment outside the church than within it? That question has stayed with me, and it continues to press a little deeper. What kind of people must we become so that wounded believers can remain among us long enough for Christ to heal them? Not just for a moment, but long enough to be known, to be strengthened, and to be made whole. This is what I haven't been able to move past, because this is not just about how we respond in certain moments. It reaches deeper than that. It touches the foundation we're actually building from. And whatever sits at that foundation will quietly shape everything that grows from it. Not just what we say, not just what we believe in theory, but what we make space for, what we allow, what we instinctively move toward or away from. And over time, that becomes culture. So when I come back to that line in Hebrews, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed, I cannot treat it like a small instruction, because that verse assumes something. It assumes a kind of life together that does not form automatically. It assumes the people who know how to move toward weakness without being threatened by it. And that kind of people doesn't come from intention alone. It comes from foundation. Not our effort to become whole, but what Christ has already finished. If that foundation is not settled, everything else begins to shift, even if we do not notice it. Weakness starts to feel uncomfortable. Struggle becomes something we try to resolve too quickly. And without ever saying it out loud, people begin to feel like they need to become stable before they can truly belong. Not because anyone said it directly, but because the foundation beneath it all is still leaning toward performance. But if what Christ has accomplished is actually complete, if access to God has already been secured, If identity is no longer something we are trying to hold together, then weakness does not have to be hidden. It can be brought out into the open without fear of losing place, and that changes the way a people lives. Because now healing is not something we strive toward in order to be accepted. It becomes something that can unfold because we already are. This is what makes a healing culture possible. Not effort, not structure, not even desire, but a people who are truly settled in what Christ has already accomplished. This is where the deeper question begins to surface, because if the foundation shapes everything, then this is not only about how we respond when something difficult appears. It's about who we are becoming. Because in those moments, our response is not ultimately determined by what we intend to do. It is revealed by what has already been formed in us. And that is what has been pressing on me. Because it's possible to say the right things, to value healing, to want restoration, and still not be a people who know how to live in a way that makes those things possible. Because this kind of formation is not individual. God is not gathering isolated believers and asking each one to manage their own spiritual life. He's forming a people. A people whose lives are shared. A people who are shaped together. A people who do not exist as separate individuals trying to remain steady on their own, but as a body. This is what the New Testament envisions. Not a collection of individuals who attend the same space, but a people whose lives are truly joined. Which brings this into focus. The question is not simply whether I know how to respond to weakness. It's whether we are a people who know how to carry one another, because formation in the New Testament does not happen in isolation. It happens within a shared life. And if we lose sight of that, everything begins to shift. Care becomes something we manage individually. Responsibility becomes fragmented, and the weight that was meant to be shared quietly returns to the one who is already struggling. But that is not what God is forming. He is forming a people whose life together becomes the place where strength is restored, where what is unsteady is supported, and where no one is left to carry the weakness alone. This is where the picture becomes more concrete. Because if God is forming a people, then the ecclesia cannot be something we simply attend. It must be something we belong to. Not loosely, not at a distance, but in a way where our lives are actually shared. Because the vision of the New Testament is not built around individuals gathering in the same space. It is built around a people being formed together, which means the ecclesia is not an audience. It's not a room full of people facing the same direction, listening to the same voice. It's a body, a people whose lives are intertwined, a people who are not just present with each other, but responsible for one another. And that changes everything, because an audience can remain anonymous. An audience can observe without engagement. An audience can come and go without being known and without being affected. But a people cannot live that way. A people notices when something is off. A people recognizes when someone's carrying more than they can hold. A people does not just gather, they bear with one another. And this is where what we said earlier becomes very real. If formation is shared, then care must be shared. It can't be reduced to a role. It can't be assigned to a few. And it cannot be sustained by structure alone. Because the moment the ecclesia begins to function like an audience, something essential is misplaced. People may still attend. Things may still appear stable. But underneath, something begins to thin. Connections become surface level. Awareness begins to fade, and those who are struggling learn how to remain unseen. Not because anyone intended it, But because the structure no longer supports that the kind of life where people are truly known, this is where it all begins to come together. Because a healing culture cannot exist in an audience. It can only exist among a people who are close enough to notice, present enough to respond, and formed enough to move toward weakness instead of away from it. And that kind of life doesn't happen accidentally. It's the result of a people being shaped together on a foundation that is already secure. And if we're honest, this kind of shared life is not something most of us have experienced consistently. Not because it was never intended, but because somewhere along the way, something essential was lost. The early life of the church was not built around attendance. It was built around participation. People were known, not in passing, not at a distance, but in the reality of their lives. They confessed. They walked with one another. They carried things together, not as a program, but as a way of life. And over time, that kind of life became less common. Not all at once, not deliberately, but gradually, structure increased. Gatherings became more defined, roles became more centralized, and without anyone intending it, care began to shift. What was once shared slowly became allocated. And when that happens, something subtle changes. People may still be present, but they're not always known. Needs still exist, but they're not always seen. And those who are carrying something heavy often learn to carry it quietly, not because they want to, but because there's no clear place for it to be held. And this is where something becomes difficult to ignore. Because while the church is moving in this direction, other spaces begin to emerge that quietly held on to what we had lost. Places where people can speak honestly, places where struggle was not hidden, places where weakness are not immediately corrected, but acknowledged. Not perfectly, not completely, but tangibly. And people went there. Not because they were looking for something different, but because they were looking for something honest. A place where they could be known without having to pretend they were already whole. And that should cause us to pause, because those practices were never meant to exist outside the life of the ecclesia. Honest confession, shared burden, walking with one another over time. These are not supplemental. They were part of the life of a people being formed together in Christ. And when those things are missing, people don't stop needing them. They simply look for them somewhere else. And that brings us back to where all this connects. Because a healing culture cannot be sustained where those practices are absent. Not because we lack desire, but because we have lost the kind of shared life that makes them possible. And recovering that is not about adopting what exists elsewhere. It's about remembering what was always meant to be present among us. Making straight paths for the wounded is where I keep coming back. Because after everything we've considered, this is no longer theoretical. This is where it becomes real. Hebrews says, strengthen the weak hands, steady the feeble knees, make straight paths for your feet. And then this, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. That language is not abstract. It's not describing something distant or symbolic. It's describing something fragile, something unsteady, something already out of place, and easily made worse if handled carelessly. And this is what has stayed with me, because the instruction is not simply to notice it and is not to correct it from a distance. It's to ensure that what is already vulnerable is not pushed further out of place, but instead healed. And that assumes something. It assumes proximity. It assumes awareness. It assumes a kind of shared life where this is even visible. Because you cannot strengthen what you do not see, and you cannot study what you are not near, and you cannot help something heal if there's no place for it to be held. This is where everything we've said begins to converge. If we function like an audience, this does not happen. If care is carried by only a few, this does not happen. If weakness has no place to be seen, this does not happen. And without anyone intending it, something that was meant to be restored can quietly be pushed further out of place, not through rejection, but through absence. This is what gives this its weight, because this is not about doing more. It's about becoming the kind of people who live close enough to one another that healing is even possible. Not perfectly, but intentionally. Because Scripture does not present healing as something that happens in isolation. It places it within the life of a people, and that means this is not optional. This is part of what it means to walk together. And healing was never meant to be peripheral. This is another place where something has been settling in. Because when I look at Scripture, healing is not treated as a side matter. It's not occasional. It's not reserved for certain moments or certain people. It appears again and again, not just as an event, but as something woven into the way God relates to his people. I do not think I fully saw this before, because it's possible to read those moments and still walk away thinking of healing as something exceptional, something that happens sometimes. But the longer I have sat with it, the harder that view has become to hold. Because what begins to emerge is something deeper. You see, God meeting people in what is broken, not avoiding it, not rushing past it, not requiring it to be cleaned up first, but stepping into it. And not only addressing what's visible, but restoring what lies beneath. And that begins to reshape everything, because healing is not just about moments of change. It's about wholeness. Not just what can be seen on the surface, but what has been carried, often quietly over time. And once you begin to see that, it becomes difficult to treat healing as secondary, because it's tied to the very heart of how God works, not only to save, but to restore, not only to bring people in, but to make them whole. And that brings us back to the life of the ecclesia. Because if this is how God works, then it cannot remain at the edges of how we live together. It must be allowed to move toward the center, not as a program, not as a specialized focus, but as something that is simply present in the life of a people who walk with one another honestly. And I think this is where something has quietly shifted. When healing is pushed to the margins, people do not stop needing it. They simply stop looking for it within the life of the church. And that changes how people live, what they share, what they hide, what they carry alone. And over time, that begins to shape the entire culture, not intentionally, but deeply. And that is why this matters, because this is not about emphasizing something new. It's about recognizing something that was never meant to be peripheral in the first place. Thinking of healing as not an event, but as a life shared over time, is another place where my understanding has had to shift. Because for a long time, I mostly saw healing in terms of moments. Something happens, something changes, and then we move forward. And those moments matter, they're real, but they're not the whole picture. Because much of what people carry is not formed in a moment. It develops over time, quietly, gradually, often beneath the surface where no one else can see it. And because of that, healing rarely happens at once. It unfolds. Not in a straight line. Not without tension. Not without moments where things feel uncertain again. And this is often where we become unsure, because when healing is not immediate, not clear, and not clearly resolved, we don't always know how to remain present. But healing was never meant to be reduced to a single moment. It requires something more. It requires time, presence. It requires a kind of nearness where no one is left to walk through it alone. And that brings us back to the life of a people, because this kind of healing doesn't happen in isolation. It happens where there's space to be honest without being rushed, where someone can be seen without being fixed too quickly, where they can take steps forward without pressure to appear whole. And that kind of environment does not form automatically. It grows within a people who have learned to live with one another differently, a people who are patient enough to remain present, steady enough not to be unsettled by what is still in process, and secure enough not to require immediate resolution in order to stay close. But healing does not mean perfection. It does not mean everything is resolved. And it doesn't mean there are no more struggles. It means something is being restored over time. And if we misunderstand that, then we can unintentionally place pressure on people to appear whole before they actually are. Not directly, but subtly. And when that happens, people do not stop struggling. They simply stop bringing it into the light. And that is where something important is lost. Because healing cannot continue where honesty disappears. And honesty will not remain where there's no room for process. So this is not about lowering the standard. It's about understanding what healing actually looks like as it unfolds in real lives, and making space for that within the life of a people. As I've sat with this, another distinction becomes clear. Because we often use the words healing and restoration as though they mean the same thing. They're closely related, but they aren't identical. Healing is about what is happening within. It's the mending of what's been affected, the gradual bringing back into place of what's been strained, wounded, or carried for longer than it should have been. And much of that is not immediately visible. It happens beneath the surface, quietly, over time. Restoration, however, is what begins to emerge from that. It is what becomes visible, and the outward expression of something that has already begun to be made whole. This is where confusion often enters, because we can begin to expect restoration before healing takes place. We look for what can be seen before giving space for what must happen underneath. And without realizing it, that creates pressure. Not because we intend it, but because the expectation is there. And when that pressure is felt, people often learn to present restoration before they've actually experienced healing. Things can look right, sound like, even appear stable, but underneath something remains unsettled. And over time, that becomes difficult to sustain because restoration was never meant to replace healing. It was meant to flow from it. And that is why this matters. Because if we don't understand the difference, we may unintentionally create an environment where what is visible is valued more than what is being made whole. When the order is right, there's no need to rush. Healing is allowed to unfold at the pace it actually requires, and restoration emerges as something genuine, not something that has to be maintained. As I've been thinking through all of this, this is something I've felt the need to hold carefully. Because when we talk about healing as something that happens within the life of a people, it can begin to sound as though the responsibility rests on us, as if we can just shape the right environment or learn how to carry one another well enough, then healing will follow. But that's not where it begins. Healing does not originate with us. It's not something we produce. It's not something we sustain. And it's not something we can bring about through effort or structure. Christ is the one who heals. He restores what has been affected. He meets people in what is broken. He brings wholeness in a way no one else can. And that must remain clear. Because the moment that shifts, even subtly, the weight begins to fall in the wrong place, even on those who are struggling or on those who feel responsible to help. And neither was meant to carry that weight. But while the church does not replace Christ, It does not stand apart from what he is doing. It participates, not as the source, but as the place where his work can be lived in and experienced over time. A people who make space, a people who remain present, a people who do not step away when something is still in process. Not because they are the answer, but because they're walking with the one who is. And that distinction matters because it keeps the center where it belongs. Christ remains the healer, and the ecclesia becomes the kind of place where his work is not resisted, not rushed, not replaced, but received. And this is where the question becomes personal. Because once we begin to see this, once we recognize what healing actually requires, it naturally leads here. What kind of people can actually live this way? Not in theory, not occasionally, but as a way of life. Because this kind of shared life does not sustain itself through intention alone. It requires something to be formed in us. Something steady, something settled. Because without it, even if we desire this kind of culture, we will not know how to remain present when it becomes difficult. And it will become difficult. There will be moments that are unclear, moments that feel slow, moments where what someone is walking through does not resolve the way we expect. And in those moments, what's been formed in us begins to surface. If we're not settled, we will feel the need to fix things quickly. If we're not secure, we will begin to withdraw when something does not make sense. If we're not grounded, we may unintentionally create distance instead of remaining near. Not because we don't care, but because we don't know how to stay. And this is where the focus shifts. Less about vision, more about formation. Because a healing culture is not something we can build directly. It's something that grows within a people being shaped in the right way. A people who are patient enough to allow process, stable enough not to be unsettled by what is still incomplete, and secure enough not to require immediate clarity in order to remain present. That kind of formation does not happen quickly. It develops over time through walking with God, through walking with one another, through learning how to remain even when things are not resolved. And this is where the invitation really is. Not to try to create something externally, but to allow God to form something internally that reshapes how we live together. Because when that formation is present, this kind of life becomes possible. Not perfectly, but genuinely. There's a part of this that's hard to ignore. Because when this kind of shared life is not present, something begins to happen. Again, not all at once, and not always in ways that are obvious, but steadily. People begin to disappear. Not necessarily from attendance, and not always in ways that can be seen, but from connection, from openness, from being known. And often, it happens quietly. Someone stops sharing. They begin to carry things on their own. They learn how to remain present without truly being seen. And over time, distance begins to form. Not because they wanted to step away, and not because anyone told them to, but because there was no clear place for what they were carrying to be held. And that's what makes this so difficult, because it's rarely the result of something overt. It is not rejection. It's not lack of care. It's the absence of the kind of shared life that makes it possible for people to remain open. And when that environment is missing, people adapt. They learn what can be shared and what needs to be held back. They learn how to appear steady, even when something underneath is not. Not as a conscious decision, but as a response. And over time, some begin to step away. Not always from faith, but from the kind of life where they were meant to be known. This is not a small thing. Because when people disappear in this way, it reveals something. Not only about them, but about the kind of environment we have actually created. This is not about assigning blame. It is something we must be willing to recognize, because people do not stop needing to be known, to be supported, to be walked with over time. They simply stop expecting to find it where it should have been present. And this is what gives this weight, because this is not ultimately about losing people. It's about losing the kind of shared life that would have allowed them to remain. And this brings us to where leadership must be understood in this light, not as something separate from what we've been describing, but something that exists within it. Because if this kind of shared life is what God is forming, then leadership is not meant to replace it. It's meant to protect it, to help it remain centered, to help it remain steady, to help it resist drifting into something it was never meant to become, but not to carry it alone. And this is where things can begin to shift, because when a culture of shared care is not clearly understood, leadership can start to absorb what was never meant to belong to it. Not intentionally, not because anyone decided it should happen, but because the need is there. And where there is need, someone will step in to meet it. And over time, what was meant to be shared can slowly become centralized. Care becomes expected from a few. Awareness becomes assigned. And the life of the body begins to narrow around those who lead. And that creates pressure, not always visible, but real, because leadership is now carrying what was meant to be distributed. And at the same time, the rest of the body can begin to step back, even without realizing it. Not out of resistance, but because the shape of things has changed. Let me say it this way. Being pastoral is not a role. It's a culture. And leadership does not replace that. It serves it. It helps keep it clear. It helps keep it grounded. It helps guard it from drifting into either neglect or overdependence, because both are possible, and neither reflects what God is forming. So leadership in this kind of environment is not about becoming the center. It's about guarding the center, making sure Christ remains the focus, making sure care remains shared, making sure the life of the body is not quietly transferred to a few willing people. Not through control, not through pressure, but by remaining aligned with what was intended from the beginning. And when that alignment is clear, something begins to settle. Leadership is no longer carrying what is never meant to sustain. And the body is no longer standing at a distance. The kind of life we've been describing finally has room to exist. There's another layer to this that I've been considering, because as we talk about healing, shared life, and the kind of culture that allows people to remain open, the way truth is carried begins to matter deeply. Not just what is said, but how it's brought. Because truth itself is not the problem. Truth is necessary. It brings clarity. It brings alignment. It calls things back into place. But the way it is carried can either make space for healing or cause people to withdraw. And that is not always obvious in the moment, because sometimes we can be accurate and still land in a way that closes people off. Not because they're unwilling, but because something in how it was brought did not leave room for them to remain open. And this is where I've had to slow down, because it's possible to value truth, to want alignment, to desire what is right, and still not recognize that the way we carry it is shaping the environment around us. And over time, that environment becomes one of two things: a place where people can remain present and process, or a place where they begin to pull back when something is exposed, not out of rebellion, but out of self-protection. And that matters, because if people begin to associate honesty with pressure or exposure with distance, they will not stop needing truth. They will simply stop bringing things into the light. And when that happens, something essential is lost. not because truth was wrong, but because it was not carried in a way that allowed it to do what it was meant to do. And this connects directly to how we understand authority. Because authority in this kind of environment, it's not about force. It's not about pressing harder or becoming more direct when something needs to change. It's about creating the kind of space where truth can actually be received, where it doesn't harden but builds, where it does not shut people down but helps them remain open even when something's being addressed. That requires something from us. It requires patience. It requires awareness. It requires restraint, a willingness not to rush resolution before someone is ready to walk through it. Not because the truth is being softened, but because it is being carried in alignment with what God is doing. And when that alignment is present, authority doesn't feel heavy. It feels steady. It doesn't create distance. It creates space. And that space becomes the environment where healing can continue. What kind of people are we becoming? Because everything we've talked about flows from that. Whether healing has a place, whether people can remain open, whether weakness is supported or quietly carried alone, all of it is shaped by what is being formed in us together. And that's not something we can manufacture. It's something that is revealed over time in how we respond, in how we remain, in whether we move toward one another or slowly begin to pull back. And this is not a distant question. It's already shaping us quietly in ways that may not always be obvious, but are deeply real. So again, this is not about trying to create something new. It's not about correcting what's been done. It's about paying attention to what is being formed among us and allowing it to come back into alignment with what we see in Scripture. Not by force, not by pressure, but by becoming more aware, more present, more willing to remain with one another in ways that may feel unfamiliar at first, because this kind of life does not come from effort alone. It grows as we begin to live differently together, as we make space where there has been none, as we notice what we have once overlooked, as we choose to remain when it would be easier to move on. Not perfectly, but intentionally. Because in the end, this is not about structure. It's not about roles. It's not about getting everything right. It's about whether the life of a people is being formed in such a way that the weak is strengthened, what is unsteady is supported, and what is out of place is not shifted further away, but healed. And that kind of life will not be built on urgency. It will be formed over time through a people who are settled in what Christ has finished and who are learning together how to live in such a way that no one has to carry their weakness alone.